It is great to have you with us this morning. Thank you so much for being here. I am thrilled to be able to be with you. My thanks goes to Brother Stockton, of course, the elders of this great congregation, and all who have had a part in making the lectureship available for those of us who are able to be here. Appreciate the students from Southwest being here. I've got my dear friend and great brother in Christ, Gerardo de la Fuente, who came with me this morning, as well as my oldest son, Christopher, who's able to be here, and I want them to know I appreciate their presence with us this morning. I tell you what, I feel so good about this hour. I feel like it has been a tremendous bestowal of grace because I have been given one of the greatest chapters of the book of Daniel. And I get to speak this morning and then sit down and enjoy the rest of the lectures for the rest of the day. It's not like I would be like my good friend Wayne and his topic and his time frame. I feel great about Daniel chapter 3. I love Daniel, one of my favorite Old Testament books of the Bible. But I believe that I'm not alone in that appraisal of the book. I imagine if you were given the opportunity, you would express that Daniel may very well be one of your favorite books of the Bible. Wonder why that is. Is it because of the fact that we from a very early age in Sunday school were enthralled with the very message that we'll be noting in just a moment from Daniel chapter 3 in the fiery furnace? Is it because later we have been really motivated to increase our prayer life from the lessons of Daniel in chapter 6? Is it because we have been so educated in the revelation of God's everlasting kingdom that has prompted us to serve faithfully our Lord and Master Jesus the Christ from Daniel chapter 2? I imagine all of these are quite likely. I remember studying in depth the book of Daniel right around 9/11. I remember witnessing the events that had unfolded just as I was submerging myself in the study of this book and realizing the threats of terrorism, considering the political unrest in the world, even as it currently exists today. I remember thinking that it may very well be that America may not remain a world power in my lifetime. And that hasn't changed. And then I read about these young men stripped and robbed from their homes, taken captive and moved to another country. And now here they are, serving God to the best of their abilities, faithfully, blessed, but yet not without the threat even of death itself, such as we see in Daniel 3. And that provided for me tremendous peace. Peace that has existed for the last 12 years since 9/11. Peace that will last for the rest of my life as long as I cling and hold on to the lessons we're able to learn from the book of Daniel. I know that no matter what may happen in life, no matter what may happen politically, militarily, no matter what may happen in the world around me, I know from Daniel that I can serve God even to the point of death. And He will bless me. What a tremendous opportunity it is for these days to be able to glean such lessons from this book. Great, great book. One of the reasons Daniel is so important of a book to study is because it is pivotal in a transition. We know, for example, that as Isaiah and Jeremiah were prophesying for the captivity to come, and now we have Ezekiel that was prophesying both before and during, and now we come to Daniel, and we know that the captivity has taken place. And we know that God is still making himself known. The city of Jerusalem is on the brink of destruction and will be destroyed. But here is God radiating through Daniel and his three acquaintances. He's making himself known in the capital city. He's continuing to make himself known by the river Kibar. God is never, ever, ever out of the equation. And so we see the transition moved away from Jerusalem and away from the temple as it is temporarily moved here into a land of captivity, which Jeremiah had prophesied would last for 70 years and then would be restored once more. We must never ever forget the fact that God intended for the nation of Israel to be that shining light wherever they are, around all of the paganism and the heathenism that would surround them. From the moment God brought them out of the land of Egypt and formed a nation from them, He wanted them to be the shining light. And now, even as they continually have hidden their light under a bushel through their idolatry, through all of their worldliness, and now as they are moved to a different land, God is still going to make sure that He is revealed to the world and that His will and revelation would be known. And we understand this quite clearly with a good study of the book of Daniel. When Nebuchadnezzar cast Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into that fiery furnace here in Daniel chapter 3, because they would not worship or bow down before an idol, and it did not burn them, this is but a revelation of God. This is God manifesting Himself, God revealing Himself, that light will never go out. And so these miracles that we see in the book of Daniel are significant, because they are the confirmation to all of the world of that day that God's revelation is true, even as He reveals Himself to Nebuchadnezzar and to all of those like him. As we move from Daniel chapter 1 and chapter 2 and chapter 3, we see a progression. We begin to see the revelation of God through these young men in Daniel chapter 1. God was with them, and Nebuchadnezzar knew that God was with them even as they would be promoted. We see in chapter 2 the fact that God's revelation would be manifest even as Daniel would interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dream, reveal and interpret that dream. God was distinct from all of the idols that were around. When we move now into the chapter of our emphasis this morning, chapter 3, we see further progression. We see Nebuchadnezzar slowly learning and gaining ground and furthering his knowledge about the God that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego served. And so we see this progress even through this chapter. So with this introduction in mind, let's now have our open Bibles, Daniel chapter 3, and let's study it together. We begin with verses 1 through 7, noting the image from Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 80 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Here is a mighty image that he has made, 80 cubits high, 6 cubits broad, that is roughly 90 feet high and 9 feet in width. And certainly it is an image of gold. Commentators have stated, while certainly he representing that image of gold, chapter 2, he at the very height of his power and prosperity, Daniel 4, certainly could have made an image that would have been solid gold at this height and breadth. But it's also very likely the case that it may have just been overlaid with gold. And that was certainly common at the time. It would have constituted about 5,700 cubic feet, and it would weigh more than 4,000 tons. This idol was established in the province of Dura, in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. We're not quite certain where specifically this plain is, other than the location that is revealed. Verse 2, then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, all the rulers of the provinces, to come to the dedication of this image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, and sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together into the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. They stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and whoso falleth not down and worship at the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up." So here is Nebuchadnezzar exerting his power, showing the extent of such, the rule, gathering all the rulers and all the people and establishing this decree that they were to do exactly what God through Moses said not do with the second commandment of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not make any graven image, neither shalt thou worship it. And yet this is exactly what Nebuchadnezzar is striving to do. His herald cries out for all nations and languages, all under his control. And certainly we see Nebuchadnezzar exerting all the people under his command. It seems as if it is ironic that he is trying to bring about a unity by this decree. And yet we see that this is a false sense of unity. Whenever we defy God and his commands, we may think that we have unity, but it is not that which is really unity. A false unity based upon false religion will never stand. Daniel shows us that in this chapter. We note now number 2, beginning in verse 8, these informers with Nebuchadnezzar. These informers, verse number 8, "Wherefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Here are what we might refer to as these tattletales, right? We probably remember them even from our childhood, as they would go and tattle to the king in hopes of lifting themselves up. And here they are, and they said, "Oh, king, we are ready to come and tell you there are those over there that are not obeying your command." Now, you said that at any moment in time, we hear these musical instruments played. And you'll note from the broad variety of these instruments that they were both stringed as well as wind, all different manners. This is a symphony, if you will, that is being played. And there are these Jews. Oh, we see that from time to time, right? Learn that even in Esther, the antagonism against God's people. And so here are these Jews, and they're not doing this. I very often have wondered in study of this, maybe you have as well, that it is primarily in this chapter that these three Hebrew young men rise to the surface and they are the ones accused. Have you ever wondered where is Daniel and why he was not accused among them? Maybe we might shed some light based upon the closing verses of chapter 2. Please ignore the chapter divisions when you are studying God's Word, as often you may miss valuable information. You remember from verse 48, the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts, made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. As a result of Daniel's faithfulness to God and his service to Nebuchadnezzar, he was uplifted to such a high status with the king and volunteered to remain within the courts, if you will, within the palace, so to speak. He had such an important position that he said, instead of putting me over the province of Babylon, which we find this image, verse 1, why don't you set these three men and give them that position and let me be in the gate? And so it may very well be that Daniel was not ever in a place where he may have been in a position to have been caught by these jealous ones who tattled on him. It may be the case that because of his position, he may have been currently out of pocket or out of the area. We're not entirely certain, but it does often leave us to scratch our head and wonder why Daniel was not accused, but be that as it may, he is not. We begin in verse number 13, and we note this inquisition. The inquisition before Nebuchadnezzar, verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made. Well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Now, we can certainly appreciate Nebuchadnezzar. It seems as if he had some decorum of respect and basically began with the approach, "Maybe I did not make myself clear. Let me be sure I reiterate myself with clarity so that you understand exactly what I am communicating and what I desire." That in and of itself is great communication skills. But we learn from the response of these three men, they understood the first time very clearly. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we're not careful to answer thee in this matter. In other words, what they're saying is, we don't need to stop and think about this. We already understand and have made our decision very clear. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Oh, these are among the greatest, most inspiring, convicted words that we find in this great book, much less in this chapter. Here are these men standing before the king, having every opportunity to talk themselves out of such. They could have said, we are but young men so far away from home. Why, we ought to just go ahead and God will know that our actions are flawed from the perspective of appearance, but in our hearts that we know that this image is nothing. They could have said, no one will really know about whether or not we comply with these demands. They could have offered a whole host of excuses to have succumbed to the demands of the king. But they rather knew the integrity of God was at stake. They knew that it was before God's people that God would be manifest. And so they knew the seriousness of this situation. And they exclaimed that we will not do what you say. And even though you ask in such a way that you do not believe that our God is as powerful as the one you believe you worship, through whom the image you have erected, that certainly it is the case God will deliver us. But even if he does not, oh wow, to be able to couple our God is able to deliver us with the conviction that even if he chooses not to, their conviction never wavers for one second. Oh, wow. What powerful conviction that is able to inspire all of God's people, that whatever temptation, whatever confrontation, whatever situation we face today, we are able to stand firm. Even if I am ever brought before the courts of our land, threatened with imprisonment for speaking out against the sin of homosexuality, as God's messenger, I will do so. And will never stop. Even if I am taken and threatened with my life, with a gun to my head, if I exclaim and confess my faith in Jesus Christ, I know I will do so, even if it means my death. I believe that even if I am possibly taking away from my family, thousands of miles away, to serve as a slave in another land, that at whatever point in time I am asked to do something contrary to the will of God, even if it means death, like these brave, faithful young men, I may be able to say, God is able, but if not, I'll still obey God, even if it means my death. Wonderful, wonderful message. Verse number 19, and through the rest of the chapter, we see now the indication that's given This then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury. The form of his visage was changed. That is, they were able to see that here was one who had promoted them to this point of serving over the province of Babylon. But now, by their response to him, his whole facial countenance changed. He was not as pleasant to them as he had been formerly. Now he was angry against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace, one seven times more than it was wont to be heated. He commanded the most mighty men that were in his army, don't ignore these small details, to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to cast them into the fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and other garments, and were cast in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Remember how much hotter it is. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire slew those men, the mightiest of men that bound them, and it slew those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste and spake and said to his counselors, "Did not we cast three men bound in the midst of the fire?" They answered and said, "The king, true, O king." He answered and said, "Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire." Evidently the fire was able to burn the outer binding to the point that they could then arise within the furnace and begin walking around. They're walking in the midst of the fire and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. King James Version renders this the Son of God, the only instance you'll find this reference in the Old Testament. American Standard Version and other versions translate it probably more accurately, a son of the gods. And it seems as if it's the case that Nebuchadnezzar, in not really quite understanding what he sees, but recognizing there is a fourth image, person, individual that is in them that somehow is helping them, because he will make reference in just a few more verses to this angel. He understands by the limitation of his own knowledge that there is some possibly heavenly being that certainly is at play. Could this be another instance of a pre-incarnate occurrence of the angel of heaven? Could this be Jesus himself in a pre-incarnate form who appeared to comfort, to assure, to offer security for these three men within this fiery furnace? It very well may be. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, verse 26, and spake and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire. The princes, governors, captains, kings, counselors, being gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Miraculous? You better believe it. I remember one time many years ago in lighting a grill. I'm so thankful I was not injured, as some have been by fire. But as a result of the inability to light, and then when it did, it was a... and I just dashed about like this, and the fire singed the hairs on my arm. Was not burned at all, other than the hairs singed in that moment of flame. And I looked down and I thought, ooh, this is cool. After I certainly thanked God for not being injured. The very fact that here they are in this fiery furnace, not a hair was singed, not even the smell of smoke on their clothing, all an indication of the power of the one and only true and living God.
Verse 28, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces. Their house shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So now again, we see this further progression of Nebuchadnezzar's knowledge of God. Certainly from chapters 1 and chapter 2, we see the fact that Nebuchadnezzar realizes the existence of the God of Israel, the God of these Jews, the God of these Hebrew young men. But up until chapter 3, he recognizes that he is but one God of many gods, still holding on to and retaining his polytheistic beliefs, his belief in many gods. Now in chapter 3, he realizes that their God is more powerful than any other God. And it's connected with chapter 4 that he will begin to finally learn that there is none other but he. There are some great, great lessons we're able to glean from this chapter, these verses. Some that are that which is quite significant to our lives. We learn lesson number one, the folly of worshiping idols. Even throughout a study of the entire Old Testament, and certainly reiterated right here, idols are nothing. Idol worship is vain. And they reinforce for us, these three young men, reinforce for us how we ought to, even today, never worship idolatry. We may not have to practice Buddhism without still following idolatry. Number two, we learn the power of music. Music is powerful. It's powerful in a negative way, but it's equally powerful when God's people lift their voices in song and worship. Colossians 3:16. We learn that worship cannot be coerced and it cannot be forced. We learn what makes up real devotion to God. It takes instruction in God's will that will then bring about conviction. We'll place trust in God and we'll act accordingly. And when we do the same thing today, God will bless His people. May God bless our memory and our study of this great account in Daniel 3.